seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Hello, everybody. You're welcome along to the Ryan Line. It is Thursday. It is Nathan, and it is Shane Ryan. How are you, Shane?
Yeah, I'm great, Nathan. Good to see you, as ever.
World Cup fever taking over your life?
No. This is the first time since I was, you know, in my teens that I'm like, I'm not even going to pretend that I care. I'll watch the U.S. games. I might even go out to a bar to watch the U.S. games. But every year, it's the same thing with the World Cup. I start out really excited. I'm going to be like, I'm going to get into it this time. And then it's just trash. It's just boring and shitty. And I don't like it. And there's always one or two amazing games. There's always one or two amazing games, to be fair. And then by the quarterfinals, it's like Portugal or Italy, like all pretending to be hurt for 90 minutes. And I can't do it.
Italy didn't qualify yet again.
Italy didn't qualify for the World Cup. That can't be true. Is that true?
Three in a row. Italy haven't qualified for.
They didn't qualify for the World Cup?
Qualify for the World Cup, and they won the Euros in between, but they did not qualify for the World Cup. No, they won. Well, they won the Euros in 2021. So yeah, they didn't qualify.
That's crazy to me. That's like the Lakers. I don't even know what that's like. But that's nuts. How about that?
But again, you see, good. You can't make an American comparison because you just have the same teams all of the time with no qualification, no relegation, no nothing.
Oh my God, give me a break. You're talking
basically
about
your same 36 teams and they all just play forever. And all right, you might be the Golden State Warriors, but someday you might not be the Golden State Warriors. Someday you might just be the Warriors somewhere else.
This is incredibly rich coming from a continent where every single soccer league, only like three teams can win, okay? At least we have a little bit of parity here. You know, in the NFL or any sport, you can be good a few years after you're bad. Unless you're one of like four teams and you're owned by a, you know, Qatari billionaire, you're not winning anything. It's a joke. Soccer is a joke. I'm going to alienate your entire
This is
audience.
International football. This is about pride of place.
Yeah, that's what I can get into is the spirit of it. And so I like the American games because even if they're boring and the Americans suck, you can kind of get into the jingoistic national part. But yeah, trying to enjoy like, you know, oh, here's Portugal and, you know, I don't know, Portugal and Uruguay in the quarterfinals.
Both have qualified.
Good. Yeah, here we go. Portugal scores a goal in the 10th minute and then it's just boring. Kick the ball out of bounds, fall down.
That's the bit. Like football is a bit. I won't say it's very similar to golf, but the tension is a part of it. Like a 1-0, yeah. Can they hang on? That's what's great about it.
But you have to care about the teams to feel that tension is the problem for me. And it's like once you don't care, then you're like relying on the sport to be good. And when the sport's not good, and sometimes the sport can be good. Don't get me wrong. One year I got into Liverpool. It was like I'm going to be a Liverpool fan. Like the EPL or whatever it's called now, it's Premier League, whatever you call it, is really good. I mean, obviously that's more high quality soccer than the World Cup because these guys don't practice together and all that. But yeah, World Cup soccer is brutal if you don't have that tension and that rooting interest, in my opinion.
You're wrong. You're very wrong. I've ever been off on the ground off my couch when Belgium scored like a 94th minute winner because it's one of the greatest things I've ever seen. And obviously, I don't care so much for Belgium. I don't, like most people, I have no great opinion on the Belgians.
Yeah.
But still, you're so invested. But I think we've got a good picture of what's happening. World Cup fever has not taken over Shane Ryan's house.
You're going to be very mad at this question, but is Ireland in it?
No.
I know. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
We got beaten.
I thought maybe they would.
We got beaten.
Okay.
In the playoff. So we got through the... we got beaten in the playoff. We were 2-0 up, and it ended horrifically.
Oh. Who against who?
Czech Republic, who did qualify.
Oh, they're very good,
so we would have been playing tonight. We would have been playing... They're not very good at all. This is the problem.
Sorry.
I think they're the lowest ranked European team there. We would have been playing tonight and we would have had a nice group and we would have made this World Cup better for everybody. But no,
oh, yeah.
We lost on penalties to Czech Republic.
Sorry to hear it, man. I think I told you before, I have a memory as a teen of watching Ireland and Spain play a real banger of a match once in the World Cup. I think Spain ended up winning, but
we lost on penalties in that one as well.
Yeah, that one I remember.
So yeah, a pattern has emerged here.
Well, at least you have the U.S. to root for.
Yeah, yeah, we all love America around the world right now. We can't wait to get behind the hosts.
Who would you right now, though? This is a real question I'm curious about. If you could choose the winner, choose your perfect final, who would the two final teams be and who would win?
Or I would like to see a repeat of the last final. I would like to see Argentina against France again. Messi against Mbappe. The greatest game of football that has ever taken place was the final in Qatar. A repeat of that.
Really?
A chance for Messi to win another World Cup.
Wow.
Or, you see, we've had a perfect scenario. So obviously in this part of the world, you know, we have a dislike for the English football team. But they've sort of given us the perfect scenario in recent World Cups and European Championships where they've been really good and they've gone very deep and they've got to finals, but they've ultimately lost. So that's also a nice scenario because there's probably a greater buzz around the place when England are doing well because everyone knows all the players and supports all the clubs, but nobody actually wants them to win, you know, due to 800 years of history and all of that sort of stuff. So, you know, England losing in horrific fashion in a semi-final, and then I'm going to go, Argentina-France final, and Argentina to win again.
For me, U.S. versus Iran would be the finest.
Right, we could all get behind that. It seems highly unlikely.
Yeah.
Seems highly unlikely.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's going to happen.
Right, let's get into the Ryan line about golf.
Golf.
I got an email to my personal email address. Well, not my personal email address, my work email address. It'd be weird if they had my personal email address, which isn't really... My personal email address is basically just the email I put in for all the things I sign up for that I don't want to go to my work email address that I'd have to look for. Anyways, this person emailed my work email address. Hi, Nathan. Big fan of the pod. So obviously I opened because that bit came up at the start of the email. I was like, yes.
No, here we go.
If it was...
A compliment.
God damn it, I can't get your podcast. I just forward straight to Brona now. That's her. She's praying to God right now that something will get sorted. Big fan of the pod, and through it, I've become a big fan of Shane's writing.
Wow, great taste.
No mention of in that part of it, that's fine. I wanted to ask Shane about covering golf at the moment. Is it more difficult to find stories to cover now compared to when Shane started? It seems harder to get access to players. There is media covering, there's more media covering the game than ever before, so hard to get new angles. What's Shane's creative process? Thanks and keep up the good work. Shane Madden.
Ooh, oh, Phil Shane. All right. It's way harder to get stories about the players than it was when I started. But also when I started, it wasn't easy. You know, I started in like the mid 2010s. This was already like agents are controlling everything. If you want access to players, you've got to beg for it. It's not like you're, you know, in the 60s and you're going to go be Arnold Palmer's best friend or whatever. So that was always tough. You know, I spent a year when I wrote my first book trying so hard to get interviews with Rory. Never happened. Ricky Fowler, it did happen after like a year of asking. You know, Jason Day, Spieth, I got interviews with those guys. Rory's really the only one I didn't get, but all of them were kind of hard in various ways. Even players that, you know, way below them that you would never think would be hard were already hard. You know, that's a little bit even harder today, I think. Probably there's like a chilling effect on me where I don't really try to do that kind of thing that much anymore. I like stories just, you know, about, you know, what happened or stories that don't involve players. Like, so right now we're working on a story about this course in Long Island that's owned by this billionaire and nobody plays it. Like that kind of thing I think is cool. And, you know, there's a ton of great stories around the world of golf that have nothing to do with who the professional players are. So I think I kind of gravitate away from going, oh, I'd like to write a profile of, you know, Ludwig Ober or something. Even though Ludwig would be fun to write a profile of, he's a cool guy. So yeah, so that's that part of the question. Creative process is just kind of like find good ideas. That's, I don't really have a creative process, I don't think. And then, you know, I like researching. I really like researching things. And I think that like when I can get a story that I can get my teeth into and like go on newspapers.com and dig into the archives and stuff like that, that's when I'm happiest. So that's really all I can say. I don't think it's more difficult to find stories now. It would just be like the same, just slightly more difficult to talk to players. Nathan, you probably same exact thing, right?
Yeah, and I'm thinking of someone who's not a writer and who's not on the beat, and obviously the game, golf is a good example of how sports media has changed, in that the sports media center at a golf tournament is getting a lot smaller now because there's far fewer writers covering the sport. So in this country now, I'm trying to think how many golf journalists there are golf writers for newspapers. So Brian Keogh with the Irish Independent.
I'm going to say Brian, Paul Kimmage, sort of.
Paul Kimmage is a sort of writer at large who covers a lot of golf
because
of the connection he has. But basically it's Philip Reed at the Irish Times and Brian Keogh. And again, you think of Irish golf at the moment and how successful it is. And we have the greatest storyline in golf in Rory McIlroy. Shane Lowry, one of the most interesting and biggest names out there as well. Okay, there's not a lot of depth in behind. And that's replicated in the UK newspapers where, again, they're down to at most a handful of what you would call a golf journalists because there's such little access. It's so hard to get any stories. It's probably very, in the modern golfing world or the modern journalistic world where, you know, being a golf writer in the 70s, I suspect, was the greatest gig in the world where you probably covered 10 tournaments a year. You had
and write one story. And you write one story
and had incredible expenses and nicest hotel and all of that. But obviously the influencer market is huge. The content creator in golf is absolutely huge. Right. But golf, more than any other sport, you have to leave your journalistic integrity at the door for an awful lot of that because it's all paid for by people within the game, whether it's sponsorship tournaments or whether it's manufacturers. But I think what's great about golf writing now and about sports journalism is the deep dives you can now do that maybe never happened before, where, as you say, you'll pick a story like a golf course in New York, or you might go, and you're probably maybe the best at doing this, of going, geez, the 18th at Shinnecock is interesting. And I can dive so deep into the 18th at Shinnecock, I can write 3,000 unbelievably interesting words around one golf hole, and there's an audience there, a very niche audience, but an audience there that's big enough to justify you being in gainful employment because it'll go around the world. And that's the best bit, that you probably read not quite as many pieces as I normally would. It's like with The Athletic, where around the World Cup, I'm last night, I'm like, oh, it's the one thing I kind of really regret since leaving off the ball is like there's like players playing at the World Cup and I don't even know them. Like that never would have happened a year ago. I know every one of them. So I'm like, I'm reading The Athletic, I'm like, where do I even start? They've got literally 400 pieces of about 3,000 words each on the bloody World Cup. So you just pick one or two and you're like, God, I've never known so much about the Jordan football team as I do right now. So that's the great piece for someone like you, I guess. If you got into it to be a journalist, and maybe Shipnook is the best of both worlds, but like, you know, I'm just going digging. I'm digging for stories. Like, well, ain't nobody talking to you, so good luck with that.
Right. Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think the other thing just to throw into that is that, you know, people are reading less than ever. So I think people of all ages are reading less than ever. And then, like, AI summaries on Google and stuff are killing traffic, too. So it's like the last piece of that puzzle to mention is how important video and podcasting is now, which, you know, you're way ahead of the game. But I'm very much trying to, like, establish a foothold there so that when they finally decide, like, well, nobody reads writing anymore, so it doesn't matter how good you are, that I have a reason to stay employed, hopefully.
And for a Golf Digest, as much as you can divulge, is the amount of people reading articles on a constant downward spiral?
Well, I do just say, like, across the industry, and I know this is true at, like, every major golf site and every sports site, the amount of people reading is down, just, like, completely. It's an industry in crisis, really. And then writing is, God, it's funny because I was just reading, like, you know, thinking about the world in, let's say, 1950 or even going back to 1920. If some famous author released a short story in the New Yorker, it was like huge news around the whole world, right? It was like a huge thing. Now imagine that now. Like, when's the last time a short story, a fiction short story, made any kind of splash? It was like maybe a few years ago, there was that cat person one or whatever it was called. But that was like, even that was a rare exception. Now even like novels are not as big. I mean, it's crazy how the written word has become devalued over time, and it's just accelerated in the last, I don't know, 20 years, but then in the last like 2 or 3 years with AI summaries, it's like further just like, damn, dude. Well, the minute the iPhone came out, it was like, forget it. It's only a matter of time before our attention spans are zapped enough that reading is going to be sort of like this niche activity. It's going to be like the way we think of poetry now. Like in 10 years, reading an essay is going to be like, oh, he reads essays. The way you'd say like, oh, he reads poetry. me writing is going to be like, oh, he writes poems. Like he writes articles. He wrote a 1,000-word article. He's just like a poet. So it's kind of sad. It sucks, but that's it. What are you going
to
do?
And if your editor came to you and said, hey, Shane, I want 5,000 words on Ludwig Aubert. Are you excited at that deep dive? Or are you thinking, I'm not going to find anyone in the inner circle who will speak off the record. I'm going to find it very difficult to get access to other players' opinions, that this is an almost impossible job and it's going to end up being a quite bland, not real reflection of the player?
I would be excited about that still, because I, you know, it's like a challenge to go get it despite the obstacles in your way. And that's fun. You know, if you don't get it, you don't get it. And that's life. The bigger challenge is getting that assignment in the first place, because nobody would be like, we want to spend money. You know, we're going to fly you to Sweden to meet his childhood friends, or, you know, whatever. We're going to spend money for you to dig deep for a 5,000 word piece on Ludwig Aubert that, you know, nobody's going to read, even if it's amazing. Or like the Twitter people, you know, like you'll get retweets from all the big and they'll all love it. But ultimately, it won't do the same. You know, it'll be less money for us than a 1-minute social video on a dude who almost got eaten by an alligator in Florida or something.
Because did you read Shipnuck's book on Rory?
I've still got to get to the whole thing.
It's fine.
I'm curious.
Like,
So
I was going to compare maybe that to his book on Phil.
Yeah.
And just that, and maybe I know too much of the Rory story, and even maybe some of the bits that weren't public had a fair idea of, but it felt like a piecing together of pieces of information that were already out there with added bits that Shipnuck would have had available to him. Whereas the Phil bit, and maybe Phil just had a way more interesting life, was even the opening chapters where it's just story after story after story that you know Phil wouldn't really want written.
That, totally.
Again, was that just of the time that everybody in Phil's late 20s, early 30s, everybody was a bit looser, everyone was a bit wilder, there wasn't smartphones, so people were allowed into rooms to see things that now they wouldn't be allowed into the room even to see things because you'd have a camera, and that you were more aware of what people were doing in their private lives. I don't know, I just, again, the book is really well written, and if you're into Rory, you'll find it very enjoyable. And Shipnuck has, I guess, been teeing this up for a year of, by the way, they weren't helping me out here. I didn't guess maybe a lot of the stuff I wanted to get out of it.
Well, it's like that first chapter is such a great example. Maybe it was the prologue of the symptom of this kind of stuff, where it's like, okay, the centerpiece of that story was an argument, you know, first of all, Rory telling him to fuck off at the driving range or whatever, and then the argument in the parking lot, where it's like very clearly, you know, I guess like in the midst of that, Rory didn't go, by the way, this fight that we're about to have is off the record, so I guess it's fair to use. But it's like, that is sort of the centerpiece and the thing he leads with, where it's like, okay, it's just sort of this like, you know, yeah, you had a conflict in a parking lot and this guy doesn't like you. But it's like, it almost is a sign of, and I'm sure Alan would say this too, it's like, there wasn't a lot of on the record interaction with Rory, and so we're forced to use this thing that happened that, you know, he didn't say it was off the record, but obviously Rory would not have wanted this published, and et cetera. And you show, I don't know. It was just an interesting thing of like, oh, okay, we're leading with this because there's not much else one-on-one with Rory.
Mm. A question for Shane. Hey, lads, watching Alex Fitzpatrick contend once again on the PGA Tour, I'm wondering what his recent success says about the pro game and the luck needed to succeed in the pro game. If he wasn't Matt's brother, I presume that should be, if he wasn't Matt's brother, he'd be plodding around on the DP Tour. When it turns out he's clearly talented enough to contend on the PGA Tour, should there be more places given to the DP Tour every year?
It's such a funny thing. And I've been thinking about it in the context of people who are more established too, the basic theme being your window is not necessarily very long, no matter, you know, your window of being at your peak performance, whether that means you're going to win majors or whether it means like, oh, I'm going to finish 80th on the PGA Tour this year. But look at Cam Young, look at Cameron Young this year, or Matt Fitzpatrick. So just unbelievably hot in the spring and early summer. Now it's, or I guess just the spring. Now it's like early summer, and they've had a few results where they're just kind of T30, right? I mean, a T40. It's like, even that, it's like you think, oh my God, these guys are unbeatable. Cam Young at the Players, you know, Fitzpatrick at the Players or at the Heritage where he won. It's like these guys, they just can't be stopped. They're going to win majors this year. And then it disappears as quickly as it came. So Alex Fitzpatrick, you know, like they're like, oh, he can clearly compete on the PGA Tour. Where it's like right now he can. And the point here is correct that at his moment of playing his best, of playing like a god, he happened to have this unbelievably lucky stroke where he played with his brother and they won that tournament. And so now he gets access to the PGA Tour while he's at his peak. But I would argue, I mean, Alex Fitzpatrick last year or 2 years ago, he wasn't doing this stuff on the PGA Tour. It's just that he, you know, very hard worker, obviously a very talented guy, but he reached this spot where he is absolutely torrid right now. It's probably not going to last very long, but by a twist of fate, he got, you know, PGA Tour access. It wasn't like he had to wait another year to finish. You know, he would have qualified this year on the DP World Tour, but he didn't have to wait. And so the point of the question is a good one in that you don't always get, when you're at your best, you don't always get into the biggest tournaments because there's a time element to all this stuff that Alex Fitzpatrick just kind of like skipped the line. It's funny, but you know, I think people shouldn't be fooled. I mean, Alex Fitzpatrick was never what you'd call a world elite golfer, and he looks like one all of a sudden, but the way these things go, I wouldn't expect it to be there next year.
I wonder, is Alex Fitzpatrick bit of an outlier even to that point, and I agree with everything you just said, but Alex Fitzpatrick maybe is better suited to that world where his brother has been, and that the talent was there for Alex Fitzpatrick to be a wherever he ended up, top 20, top 30. But actually, he's, as the word that was used there, I think, was plodding. He's plodding around the world on the DP World Tour, staying, I'm sure he's not begging his brother for money to put him up in a nice hotel everywhere he goes. He's, you know, going and doing the 3 week stint in South Africa, and then he's going to India, and then he's going to Australia, and then he's taking 2 weeks break, and he's back at the Czech Open, and it's a drain. And he's looking at his brother naturally going, I want a bit of that. And he goes and visits his brother, and he goes and hangs out at the US Open. He's like, God, there's another world. I want to be a part of that. And actually, once he gets there, then he's very comfortable. He's like, yeah, this is, it's the bit of, I'm around the world, slightly jealous in a brotherly way. And yeah, I'm comfortable living this life, and I can play my best golf now that I have my PGA Tour exemption. I don't have any of those pressures. I feel on a par with my brother. I feel comfortable, been on a surrounding with him. I know the ins and outs because of him. And that goes for maybe every guy on the DP World Tour, that if they just had that break, the privilege that the breaks then bring you makes it an awful lot easier to play good golf.
Crazy. Yeah, no, it's 100% true. It takes a lot of pressure off. Yeah, you're right. It's a little bit like a freshman in high school coming in and his brother is like a star football player as a junior. It's like, it's going to be a little bit easier for that guy. Like, everybody knows him. You know, his brother's got status, so he's got status. So yeah, I think it's true. And it also just comes and goes quickly. I think outlier is a perfect word, Nathan, there. He's an outlier in just so many different ways. It's kind of like a fairy tale this year for him. And, you know, like, that's the thing. It's like the pressure, you're totally right. The pressure's off to a certain extent in that it's like, even next year, it's like you could go have a miserable, you know, 2027, and you're still got another chance in 2028. So the time pressure is taken off a little bit, and time pressure is one of the most stressful, horrible things probably about being a professional golfer.
Should there be more places given to the DP World Tour every year?
I don't know. I mean, I guess you could analyze, you know, how they do when they get over here. And there's been some great success stories, you know, Reitan, or however you say, Christopher Reitan. He's been awesome. He's been unbelievable. I'm trying to think of, you know, Fitzpatrick, of course, but who else has been really good this year?
There've been plenty of guys hanging around and doing all right. Yeah, yeah. And again, who are certainly comfortable of being in the top 70, top 100, top 120.
It's sure.
there has to be a cutoff point at some stage for the PGA Tour. And again, you're taking so much from the DP World Tour. And I suppose the fairest way of doing it, and you can't go, well, Alex Fitzpatrick, actually, if he was able to stay in 5-star hotels in America all the time where they spoke his language, he'd be a great golfer. Let's get him in. That
right.
If you're not good enough to finish in the top 10, you'd have to say, in general, your golf is probably going to struggle to be in the top 70, top 100 in America. And again, yeah. Some of those guys will get lucky. Some of those guys will have gone a run in October, November on the DP World Tour and hit their really sweet spot at just the right time and got onto 100%. The PGA Tour. And then they're completely outclassed. And they're, again, I think it was a John Parry who got his card and was sort of talking about, was it John Parry? It was one of the older players who got his card. Might have been Paul Waring who got his card.
So John Parry, I'm looking at the list here. John Parry was one of the 10 last year who got his card via the DP.
Paul Waring, I think, is a bit older.
Waring wasn't one of the 10 last year, but okay. Anyway.
But he is playing a lot of, he must have some sort of a card because he was certainly playing a bit in America this year. But that thing of, well, do I actually, I think he might have been living in Dubai. But do I actually want to move?
He got a medical extension because of his shoulder, it looks like. Yeah.
Do I want to move to America at sort of 40, 41? And even though I've proven I'm now good enough to play there, is this, would I be better off in having two or three really good years on the DP World Tour where I'm one of the better players than, again, having to slog it around?
Yeah.
And like Raytan's a perfect example because Raytan turned pro about 8 years ago and didn't really prove during those 8 years that he was good enough to contend on the DP World Tour, never mind to be a PGA Tour winner.
Right.
I guess the overall point is like, there's very little between these guys and you got to strike while you're hot. You got to have the little bit of luck and you got to be able to deal with all the things that being a professional brings. And, anyone who's listened to this podcast, you only have to listen to Gary Murphy or Peter talk about it and the stress and the strain of fighting for your living week in, week out, hotel to hotel, booking late flights, all of that sort of stuff. And some people's personalities can still play great golf with that. Lots of people can't.
So I'm looking now. It looks like 5 of the 10 from last year are in the top 100 of the PGA Tour this year. Christopher Raitan is the best of the bunch by far. And then others have had like limited success, but Alex Noren is actually playing pretty darn well. But based on those numbers, you'd say no. I think it's 10 seems to be the perfect number.
Yeah.
Half of them are in the top 100. You got one or two who are playing really well, and then the rest are struggling big time. So yeah, I don't think the simple answer for me to the question is 10 seems about right.
Shane, what are the best golf courses in the USA that haven't hosted a major?
Oh man, I'm like such the worst person for this question. I don't know. Has Augusta? Yeah, Augusta's hosted a few. I can only say the ones I've played.
Why don't they host the U.S. Open at Augusta and like just grow the rough up? What we're going to do? We're going to finish in April, as always, the Masters.
Yeah.
And we're not going to touch this golf course for 2 months.
Right.
The greens are going to be completely, the stint meter is going to be way down. You're not getting your 15, 16, we're going to slow these greens. It's going to be a totally different experience. There's going to be rough right up the side of the greens.
Yes. I love this. I think they should do a year. I think that's a brilliant idea. And I think the year after that, they should have a PGA there and let the PGA do their thing. And then the year after, they should let the RNA turn it into an open venue as best they can.
Underwater, the sprinklers, they just turn them off for the year.
Totally turn them off.
In Georgia, and it's okay. It's like playing on the desert.
That would be amazing.
But we all know the hole.
Augusta, as you, that's such a brilliant idea, actually. I'm really into that, Nathan. I'm going to get my best people on it.
I look forward to 5,000 words on it by the end of the week.
Yeah, but to the question, that's a great question. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a golf course. I'm not like the biggest expert on that. The good courses I've played have all hosted majors. And then I played ones like Tobacco Road, which I love. But I think like the pros would probably score 40 under on that one. But it'd be fun to see.
Hilton Head has never hosted a major, has it?
Harbortown. I don't think you're right. Yeah, Harbortown's a great one. Oh yeah. So I mean, if we look at like tour courses, you could do it that way. It's like Muirfield Village, I guess. You know, where the memorial is. I don't think they've hosted. They've had a Ryder Cup, but Harbortown never has. I mean, Sawgrass. I don't know. Oh, I'm sorry. Sawgrass hosts one every year. My fault.
Whoa! You got the electric shock there from
yeah. Tour.
No, we're all on board on this. How dare you? How dare you? Muirfield Village is a great golf course.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's so fun. I really enjoyed watching it this past week, and I kind of took it on myself to learn more about the course. And yeah, it's very cool what they've done. Yeah, that's it's a great tour venue, and it rewards amazing golf. I mean, they have to be, it's like kind of like US Open, just like, you know, 20% easier, but like you have to be so good and so consistent, and it punishes you so much if you screw up. I love it.
There was a great line in one of the behind the scenes videos afterwards where Jack is talking to JT Poston, and he's talking to JT Poston's family, and he's on about leading wire to wire, and he's like, wow, he was six shots clear at once. He's like, I don't even think I could have done that.
That's awesome.
Yes,
that's great. Yeah, JT Poston. That's like, where did that come from? You know, but he stepped up. It's cool. I like when that kind of thing happens.
Question for Shane: do caddies ever bitch and moan about their players when they aren't around? Would Ted Scott have been moaning to everyone in the caddy room last week?
I'm sure Ted Scott would not have, because everything you say will get around. But yeah, I'm sure that happens. You know, the caddies are more human than the players. So I'm sure they're, you know, they're definitely going and having beers and moaning and groaning about each other and about their players. 100%.
Shane, no sign of Rory again this week. If Shane was worth £1 billion, how often would he play a year?
I don't know. I can't put myself in his shoes. Yeah, but I mean, he's had a lot of success in Canada, but he's just not going to play if he doesn't have to. I mean, it's hard to get him to go to signature events at this point. The fact that he was at the Memorial is a coup for the PGA Tour. So yeah, he was never going to go to Canada. You know, they would have loved him up there, but c'est la vie. Yeah, I don't know. If I was a billionaire, I would probably, especially if I had kids, the truth is I would do the same exact thing. I would play as infrequently as I could. But
you are sort of Rory-esque, though, aren't you? Like, you know, you're, Augusta, not for me, very hot and sweaty, been there, done that. Someone else can do it.
Yeah, I won't even play a good course, much less cover it. Now, yeah, I travel like 5 times a year, and that's plenty for somebody with young kids. I mean, that's what I said. Like, these guys, their lifestyle's nuts. I mean, it's a crazy, crazy lifestyle. But what differentiates the best ones is how badly they want to win and how competitive they are. So with Rory, it's so interesting. Like, he definitely has that. But I think Rory quickly gets in the mode of, if he wins a major, we've seen it the last 2 years, He turns off a little bit. Like, and he's playing much better this year than he did last year after winning the Masters. But it's just like, it's his priorities shift very, very quickly, I think.
The great thing about it, once again, with Rory, is if he doesn't win the US Open or the Open, like, we will get many, many great pieces on Rory switches off, needs to play more. This thing can't go on. It's unprofessional to not turn up at all of these tournaments. Is he a professional golfer or not? Like, so yeah, one way or another. Whereas if he wins, it's up. All the guys are going to start thinking, why would I bother turning up the Canadian Open?
I know, it's almost a dangerous precedent if he does win. It's like you win a major, nobody's ever going to play again. Aaron Rye is going to be like, I'll see you at the PGA, or I'll see you at the US Open, fellas. I'm done.
Hey lads, at what stage do we need to have a word about Ludwig? 26 and no wins in 18 months. Overrated? ?
He's not overrated from a skill standpoint, but he's having trouble playing under pressure. And I think we've talked about that before. The players was alarming, I think, if you're a Ludwig fan. it was just a complete meltdown on the back nine. And then it hasn't been that prominent since, but we've seen him. One of the Texas tournaments, he was kind of close to the lead and struggled again. So yeah, I think that would be, you know, the zero wins is not a function of skill. He's been there with a chance to do it. It's that he's not really good under pressure right now. He hasn't figured that part out yet. And I hope he does, right? Because he seems like somebody who is kind of, he's very smart. He's very personable. I think he has good perspective, but I think we talked about this with the players. It just shows that he came in Saturday and everybody was like, oh, he's thinking about this just the right way. It doesn't matter, right? All that matters is how you respond when the heart rate quickens, when the prospect of, you know, changing your life with one of these huge wins is, excuse me, actually on the table. Then how are you going to play? And for him so far, the answer is he's going to play like crap and he's not going to do very well. So yeah, I mean, there's reason to worry. I mean, he's got to figure that part out or he won't win a major.
Yeah, because every time I look at the betting for a major, he's fourth or fifth favorite. I'm like,
yeah, just not exactly.
Again, built on the talent and the expectation and what he has done at majors mm-hmm. before, but it is still hard to get away from some of those Sunday performances for him as well, it seems.
100%, yeah. The gambling odds are so funny that way. They always have the same guys up there when you're like, it's like, do it must just be name recognition, right? Because I think a lot of the people betting on majors are guys who aren't as into it as we are. So they're like, oh, Sepp Straka, right? I'm like, Sepp Straka, he's like the 12th in odds. He's had a pretty good year. I'll put some money on him without realizing that Sepp Straka just cannot play in majors, right? Mm. He's going to miss the cut. And so that always happens. It's like, you know, like when Tiger was out of form, he was still always like one of the favorites and because people like to bet on Tiger Woods.
Well, I got a very nice bet last week ahead of the US Open on JJ Spaulding, who was 70-1, and then
very nice.
Which I think he's about 30th on the list. I mean, he's playing really well. He's obviously a defending champion, yeah, which will be difficult. But you're going is yeah, just that there's not that, as you say, that name recognition there. And then last week he played really well again, and his odds never yeah, changed. I'm like, what are we basing this on here? He's 2 weeks out from the US Open. He's a defending champion. He's one of, I would yeah, say, form-wise, top 10 players in the world. But somehow we're still ranking him below Maverick McNealy.
Yeah, no, I can't explain it. Maybe the course doesn't suit well for him, but I doubt they're thinking about that. Yeah, it's totally name recognition. Like, he's just not a huge name, even after winning the U.S. Open. So, good bet. Speaking of betting and gambling in pools, I do want to bring up before we're done, Nathan, this is the first week we've been sitting here where you are not the leader in Green Asylum, and I want to know how that feels.
Very upsetting, because in my head I've spent the money. I was even a few weeks ago looking at the exchange rate to see what it's going to translate to for me. Yeah, I've had a very yeah, bad run of it.
Yeah,
Hideki screwed me completely last week. I haven't had. Yeah. I barely won a point in about 6 weeks. Now a lot of my, we've said before, you get 8 × 4, 8 × 3, 8 × 2, 8 × 1. I've had a lot of my ones and yeah, twos the last while, but I don't have many fours and threes left. So I need someone
to
step up. I've had to sub in Harry Hall this week, and when your hopes of the week are on Harry Hall in Canada, it's not a great place to be. But I see you're making a comeback. Well done.
Yeah, I mean, if Sam Burns wins this week, Nathan, I could be in the money. I don't think I'm ever going to catch you, but I think I could make some money on this. And that would be interesting. You finishing like second or third after front running, me finishing fourth. It's like the meme of the guy in third place on the podium drinking the champagne. I might be the happier guy.
Anything less than first right now, and I'm devastated.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm the Jean Van de Velde of this goddamn thing.
That's right. Which all, yeah, you're right now you're barefoot in the creek going, uh-oh.
Yeah. Well, Harry Hall will save me, surely. I'll just take it off.
Your caddy's like, no, don't play Harry Hall.
Save Harry Hall for later in the summer. Next week we have the US Open. You're going to Shinnecock?
I'll be there. I'm excited to go to Shinnecock. I'm really excited. I'm not driving. I said this is too far. I'm taking a plane.
Shinnecock is, I'm going to say, upstate New York.
So no, it's on Long Island. So
upstate
it's
New York.
That's downstate New York, Long Island. So here's New York. Okay, hold on, let me It's a triangle like this. Down here is New York City, and Long Island is off here. So it's downstate New York, off New York City. The problem with driving, it's easy to get to New York City. It's like 2 more hours to get all the way to the Hamptons on the end of this island. By the way, is the Hamptons a household name in Ireland? Like, if I said the Hamptons, would you recognize that as a rich people place?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
It was from Sex and the City, I'm going to say. They used to always go to the Hamptons, didn't they? There's something, it's probably, Rona's looking at me like there's something more culturally relevant. What's one of those Housewives programs probably takes place in the Hamptons, does it? I don't, she's like, why are you asking me? Why are you asking me?
Yeah. It's incredibly Brona a big Housewives gal?
Not Desperate Housewives. One of the reality TV shows. Yes, the Hamptons. Lots of money. Aspen and the Hamptons.
Yeah, okay.
The Hamptons is the summer version. Okay.
Yeah, so this is the Hamptons where it is. It's on the eastern end of Long Island. Beautiful land. It's crazy. So, like, you know, Golf Digest does their course rankings. Within, you could take a 2.5 mile walk and hit the clubhouse of Southampton, which is like number 34 in New York State, Shinnecock, which is number one in the country, Siboney, which is like number 50 in the country, and National Golf Links of America, which is number 7 in the country, just situated. I mean, like, they're literally abutting each other. It's nuts. It's probably the densest, like, best part of American golf that exists.
Lots of nice restaurants for you to enjoy, I assume.
I'm sure. Yeah, the Hamptons, come on. I'm sure there'll be plenty of good restaurants. Okay. Houses on the beach. It's going to be a party, Nathan. You should come.
I was only thinking of, and this is quite the tangent that I'll leave you on, and I can't even go into enough detail to make it interesting, so I don't know why I'm saying, but since you brought up Long Island, when I was 14, the hook is I'm going all the way back, and how football unites the world. In Ballyhonus in Mayo, we were part of some international football tournament that happened in Mayo, and teams from all over the world came, and two teams from Long Island came to play in Ballyhonus and around Mayo, and they saw all the kids, they're all under 14, so they came to stay in our houses and stayed for 10 days or whatever, and brilliant, you know, particularly this is like 1991 or 1992, so we're all Americans. I think we went to see Terminator 2 in the cinema. That's nice. When it was. I was a bit young, but because the lads were a bit older, I got to tag along. So I was often wondering, you know, whatever happened to these five guys that stayed in my house. And I was chatting to someone recently. We were like talking about the team name and all that. And then I went Googling and I found a photograph of all of them. And I was like, I wonder what these guys are. So I started Googling their names. And then one of the names was bizarrely somebody who I had covered on this program in a very negative way for their involvement in American sport. I'm not going to give, not going to say any, and had stayed in my house. I was like, you're kidding me. Because I was like, no, it's obviously just the same name. And then the more I Googled, I was like, no, it's definitely this guy. I was like, wow.
God, from Long Island? Oh, this is going to kill me. You're going to have to text me after.
It's something we covered on this show. I don't know. It's something you'd be aware of, but it wouldn't be a massive, in certain ways it was, but this is sort of 3 or 4 years ago, it would have been quite a hot topic.
Interesting. Well, America, don't tell the normies, but text me.
I will.
The important people can know. Great.
All right, on that note, beware in Long Island. Some bad people. Some bad people, Shane.
Oh, yeah. Terrible people. We saw it at Bethpage. Terrible people. That's the downside.
Terrible people.
Yeah, by the way, I just want to shout out quickly two friends of the show. This is going to be very vague, but one friend of the show said hi to me at the PGA. I appreciated that. Another friend of the show has helped me out greatly recently in a project. Anyway, enough of that. I just want to shout them out. Is this the best place to pee? It is. It's the best places to pee story. Yeah.
I knew that's where our audience would come to the fore.
Yeah, 100%. No, it's a good fan base you got there, Nathan. I just want to say I appreciate them all.
We appreciate all of you all of the time.
All the time.
On that note, get your questions in on the Discord. You can email us golfweekly@offtheball.com. You can send me a message on Instagram if you want as well, where I got a couple this week. So, or Shane, send Shane. He might look at it. I don't know, but I will. But we shall talk to you. We might try and we'll check in earlier next week, Shane, if we can, when you're in Shinnecock and get the lay of the land. All right, we'll talk to you.
I know, and I think I'm doing. Yeah, perfect. Sounds great. Great. Bye.
Goodbye. Go and tell
all my exes wear Rolexes, but I reside right here in Dardanelle, all picket town. Little J.D. starter kit right here.
chocolate.